Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio with your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducross. We got an incredible show in store for you. Tristan, boy, do we have one in store for you. Epic Fighting 29 just around the corner. So we bring to you the voice of San Diego MMA, Carlos Kramer, to discuss that event as well. Sean, absolutely. The only true way to do it is our way. But it's not all about that. And tonight, our listeners are in for a treat. Right? Bellator 145 is up, and they've got some scores to settle on this one. Absolutely, Sean, and what's even better to start off right now is the fact that there's been rumors flowing around everything that apparently Will Brooks and the Pitbull brothers got into an issue and a fight, and the tape is apparently going to be leaked later on this evening about what actually transpired. But this isn't the first time the Pitbulls are in a ruckus before an event. That's true. We saw it the last time here at Pechanga in Temecula, that when Patricky was getting ready to fight. It's not the first time that these guys have been involved in some type of altercation. It was Patricky and Syed Awad. So when you look at this and you're trying to figure out who's telling the true story, you kind of go towards believing Will Brooks in this sense and not the Pitbull brothers. So it's going to be interesting to see when this video gets released and what exactly happened and transpired, because you've got Will Brooks saying, I didn't jump anybody. I didn't sucker punch anybody. But yet he claimed that he got jumped. And he took a picture of his shirt, and it's all bloody. But yet he says that I'm still pretty. So you're wondering how bad was it and whose blood it was. So could it have been the Pitbull brothers that the blood's on his shirt? Who knows? But it's not exactly the best approach to go into this Bellator 145 Vengeance Temple event and having this type of controversy being surrounded by one of two title fights.
Right, and both guys are on this card. You got Pitbull versus Daniel Strauss. You have Will Brooks versus Marcian Held. And at this point, Sean, you don't need this kind of unwanted attention coming into this, like you said, for your Temple event. And when I look at Pitbull, I would think that these brothers need to get their heads on straight, because Pitbull is taking on Daniel Strauss. And like our show is titled, scores are going to be settled this weekend. Either if it's not in Bellator, it's in Epic Fighting 29, or out there in UFC Fight Night 77. Any way you cut this, there's going to be a score to be settled. Daniel Strauss versus Pitbull, the main event. Both these guys have fought before. I like this main event because I'm looking for Daniel Strauss to come out on top this time. You're looking at three clashes between the two, and one was 11 months ago. And the only reason why Daniel Strauss lost that fight was because he got cocky and was pushing it, and he got caught with a rear naked choke.
Yeah, but when you look back at that fight, I mean, we were at that fight, and Daniel Strauss looked perhaps the best he's ever looked in that second fight compared to the first fight. But the things that raised its ugly head in that fight was the fact that he hit not one, but at least two low blows that made you scratch your head about why. Were those intentional? Did he let his aggression get the best of him? Because he was winning that fight. He was outstriking Pitbull. On paper, you can ask anybody. Daniel Strauss, on paper, is the better of the two fighters. Always has been and always will be. But there's been something that, when it comes to game planning and stylistic matchups, he seems to struggle against Pitbull.
He gets in his way. Because he was landing that left hook over and over and over again against Pitbull. So at some point, he's going to have to come out on top and kind of step away from his eagerness when he's in there. Because as a champion, you have to be able to get out of your way. Step aside. put your game plan together and follow through on it. I think this time, third time's the charm, and I believe Daniel Strauss is going to take that step, that final step, in beating Pitbull, and he's going to walk away with that strap. If he can stay out of his head, like you said, and stay focused at the task at hand, and keep this fight standing, I completely agree, Tristan. I completely agree. Daniel Strauss will walk out the victor out of the third fight, but that's the key ingredient right there. He's got to stay out of his head and stay focused, because if he's this new Daniel Strauss that King Mo has and said, bro, you need to talk, if he's going to be that guy, now let's see him own it. Let's see him take that next step and learn from King Mo in the past. But can David Rickles versus Michael Chandler take that next step? Because David Rickles, last time these two faced off, David Rickles only lasted mere seconds in their fight. David Rickles is an interesting cat. I think he focuses a lot on his debuting of, oh, what type of walkout am I going to do right now? And when you look at it, is he more focused on that or is he more of a fighter? The last time he fought, he did an illegal knee in front of his hometown and made you go, oh, no. Is that the type of David Rickles we're going to get? Or are we going to see the guy that is the cocky, the flamboyant type of fighter that we're starting to see him establish himself? Is he the real deal? Because Michael Chandler, we know, is going to bring his A game. We saw that the last time he fought in his hometown, he destroyed the guy that was in front of him. He loves to embrace his hometown and bring the fight to the guys. Is this going to steal a show? It may be.
See, the thing about Michael Chandler is that he's coming off a submission win over Derek Campos, which on paper, I looked at that and I was like, dude, Derek Campos has no shot against it. And sure enough, you look at it and he didn't. But it was his first win over 2 years. So I'm looking at him to build on that momentum against David Rickles. I just feel bad that David Rickles is going back against a guy like Michael Chandler, because all three losses on David Rickles' win-loss record has come to the fact that he's lost to top contenders. He's lost already to Michael Chandler. He's lost to Carl Basso and Pachecki. So at what point do you get over that hump? Do you become like a Michael Bisping in Bellator? That you're good enough, you're just not good enough to earn a strap. Or is he the next equivalent to what we've been talking about for the last year? Is he the gatekeeper of the lightweight division that people are going to go through him, that he just can't take that next step? But that's sad for David Rickles, because he's still a kid. He still has a lot left for him. And you're looking at Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler, to me, he's a little bit long in the tooth. He can move. He can still move. Don't get me wrong, but he's 13-3, and you're looking on paper, Sean, is that 16-3 versus 13-3? You think that the other one might have the slight edge, but when you look at the video and you break down all the fights that he has had, you see some glaring weaknesses. You said he pays a little bit too much attention to the way he comes out to the octagon. I can honestly see that. But David Rickles, he has so much talent to put forth. He's going to have to bring his A game against Michael Chandler.
And it's going to be one tough competitive fight, just because of that. Again, it's in his hometown. That's what you have to look forward to. I mean, you touched on it a few minutes ago at the beginning of the show, Will Brooks versus Marcian Hell. And we didn't really get to touch on a whole lot about that one, but that one is a testament of Will Brooks' ability as a fighter, because of the fact that Marcian Hell is a legit ground guy. He is the king of the leg locks. If Will Brooks wants to hold on to his title and still be the lightweight champ, he has to be able to keep this fight on his feet. That is his only chance. But this is one of his true tests. But it's interesting with the fact that the main event is Patricio, but then you got the two guys below him, two lightweights on the same card.
is the Michael Chandler versus David Rickles the number one contender fight for Will Brooks and Mercy and Held winner?
Right. That's what I think is going to happen, is the winner of Will Brooks and Mercy and Held will face Michael Chandler or David Rickles. That's evident. The thing I like about the matchup between Will Brooks and Mercy and Held is that Held is a ground guy, like you said. The takedown defense is going to be the deal breaker for Will Brooks. Will Brooks is going to have to stop that takedown because Marcian Held has literally no stand-up. Even though he's been slowly trying to improve his stand-up game and his striking has slightly improved, it's not going to get the job done if you're going to go to blows and slug it out with Will Brooks.
And you're talking about slugging and throwing out blows. The biggest question mark on this card, Tristan, is Bobby Lashley versus James Thompson.
I love how the fact that they're building this guy up, Bobby Lashley, calling him the rated juggernaut. Okay, I have a problem with that sentiment. Because ratings juggernaut, I immediately think, what, you're going to just keep feeding guys because he brings in ratings? So you're not going to give him any kind of talent or anything like that? So we're just going to keep feeding him because your heavyweight division is lacking. And so now this guy becomes your poster boy. You don't give him any real true talent. And the only reason why you're giving James Thompson to Bobby Lashley is, let's be real, James Thompson has a decision victory over Bobby Lashley in the Super Fight League. And let's just call it what it is. They want to legitimately crown Bobby Lashley and put a name on his record that people might actually know.
This is the first fight that can legitimize Bobby Lashley. Completely agree. I remember when we saw James Thompson, and I was a member of Team British Invasion.
An honorary member, because you're not British.
No, I'm not British. But James Thompson was a big boy. And when we saw him at the British Invasion, the temple event here in San Diego, the thing that stood out about James Thompson was he looked across Bobby Lashley and cut a promo on him where he slammed the table. It feels like the dislike for each other is real. If James Thompson is 100% healthy, I am fearful for Bobby Lashley.
I'm fearful for Bellator, not Bobby Lashley, because I think Bobby Lashley, as a fighter, knows at some point in time it's going to happen. He's going to have a loss on his record.
Correct.
He's going to have to face heavyweights that will pose a risk to him at some point. I feel bad for Bellator because Bellator highly believes, and Spike TV, that Bobby Lashley is the number one ratings draw on the roster, period. And the thing about them is that they want to build the heavyweight division around Bobby Lashley. But yet they keep continuously to feed Bobby Lashley or Kimbo Slice and building this heavyweight division. I just don't think that's naturally the way that you should go. You got guys out there like Lorenzo Hood that I swear could just walk in right now and lay out Bobby Lashley, James Thompson, Kimbo Slice, and all them. If you want to go on YouTube, look up the Ducross Bros. We got his video on there about his training. It's real. That's the point that we're getting to about the heavyweight division in Bellator, is that they're strongly lacking in the depth. So in their hopes that that this is going to legitimize Bobby Lashley, I think if James Thompson runs right through Bobby Lashley and ends all that talk, what's the response going to be?
And that's what I was just going to say. You just nailed it on the head. What will the response be around the MMA community if Bobby Lashley loses to James Thompson?
A guy that's been out of fighting for 2 years, Sean,
due to numerous injuries. You're giving James Thompson, you're giving him to Bobby Lashley in hopes he's not going to dethrone Bobby Lashley. In hopes that this does exactly what we've been saying for the last 5 minutes, if you will. Legitimize Bobby Lashley. This could all blow up. All blow up in just one punch.
And how bad is that? Is that you could blow up everything that you have worked so hard for and built so much around and could all go up in smoke in 10 minutes.
Just in the blink of an eye, it could all change. That's the future of Bellator 145 Vengeance in St. Louis Friday night. Is in blink of an eye, the face and the future of Bellator MMA can completely change. Courses of individuals can be completely altered. How will Bellator adapt and change with these changes?
I don't know, because you're talking about change, and there's change that's coming straight down the pipe, because it's true. It's true. It's Kurt Angle.
We all know he's not going to fight. He's just there at the pub because it's St. Louis.
I don't know. Last time we heard it, last time we interviewed somebody that signed for the Fan Fest, his name was Ken Shamrock. And he told us, when we called him out, straight out, if you want to see the video footage of that, go to the www.thehotspotshow.com. Look at the video of the DuCross Brothers Sports Warriors interviewing Ken Shamrock. Because we called him out. We said, so does this mean that you sign with Bellator? And he said, you know, I can't discuss. I'm not going to exactly sit on that, but here you go, Kurt Angle, Fan Fest. There's always been talks that have always surrounded this guy about MMA. Ever since he left the WWE, even in TNA, even with his broken neck. All with all the injuries he has had throughout his whole entire career, it has all come down when or if he would ever have at least one MMA fight. I think that at FanFest you might hear something, or on Vengeance 145 you hear it here first, that I believe Kurt Angle on Vengeance 145 is going to announce that he has a fight in the Bellator cage against Ken Shamrock.
Let's regurgitate circa 1990 with Ken Shamrock and Kurt Angle.
So if we want to have a WWE match, here you go.
Would it surprise me? Probably not, just by the pure simple fact that at the end of the day, what does Scott Coker do best? He knows how to put a fight together that'll entice fans for one way or another.
Like we say, Sean, good, bad, or indifferent, you're going to get people to talk. You're going to get people to sit right there in front of the TV, on free TV, let alone on Spike TV. There's a possibility. Now, I'm going to say that there's like a 98% possibility. Yeah, we're going to see a Kurt Angle versus Ken Shamrock happen on Bellator. Everybody talked about it for years about, oh my God, we should have Ken Shamrock versus Kurt Angle in a WWE ring. Well, why not do it in a cage? Either way you cut it, Sean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. He's going to get his first fight in Bellator.
If he fights before CM Punk in MMA with a broken neck, you might want to test the fortitude of CM Punk.
CM Punk has an injured shoulder and he's not going to fight. Dude, he's been out of wrestling, let alone fighting, for the last like million years by now. You got to be able to put forth the work ethic and the habit of being an MMA fighter. Injuries will happen. It will come during training. So when I see this and I see Kurt Angle, that fight's going to happen before we see CM Punk ever step in a UFC ring. It's just going to happen. And it's sad because everybody was building it up and going, oh my God, we need to see CM Punk. It ain't going to happen. I don't think he's ever going to step inside the octagon.
Like I said, we'll see, and I'll laugh hysterically if Kurt Angle makes an MMA debut with a broken neck and bad health before CM Punk debuts in the UFC.
Right. But you're listening to the new Cross Brothers, the Sports Warriors. We're about to turn this up. Epic Fighting 29 is coming up November 6th at the Four Point Sheraton in San Diego. Also, we have the voice of San Diego MMA, Carlos Kramer, joining us up next.
Excelsior, in Paris Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. You're listening to the Sports Warriors with Sean and Tristan DuCross. Sean, huge weekend coming up in fights. But as everybody knows, we also talk about the amateur ranks, let alone local MMA. We've covered every event that has been out here in local MMA. Epic Fighting 29, their second show back, and they are putting on one heck of a card. And then we also are joined by San Diego, by the voice of San Diego MMA, Carlos Kramer. Epic Fighting 29 stands out as, I want to say, as the rebirth of Epic Fighting, because they were at a little hole in the wall place at the sound stage and stuff like that in San Diego. Now they're back at home at the Four Point Sheraton and about to tear up the roof, because they are going big in terms of, and I'm talking about age, because apparently we are so tight in terms of amateur MMA that a lot of people look at the amateur ranks and think that it's a kid's game. And we look at it as it's an everybody's game. MMA, at some point, you can either believe that you are in it for the long run or you're in it just because. But at the end of the day, Epic Fighting 29 goes above and beyond as they put seven fighters of 30 years and over on this card. Two over the age of 34 will be making their debut. When you look at that alone, they're facing kids about our age on this card. We talked to Carlos Kramer, you hear it, we brought this up to him too, was that age apparently does not matter. Because whether you put in the discipline and the understanding of MMA or not, MMA wasn't as big as it is now. So a lot of people got a late start into MMA. So sometimes you hit your peak in your mid-30s, late 40s. Just because of how the MMA world kind of started kind of making its niche and growing as a legitimized sport. So you have these guys that are such small people in a big pond. You have to choose when you're setting up a card, how do you make these guys fit against certain people?
I get that, but when I think amateur MMA, and I'm thinking the future, I think the young bucks, I think the young guns. I get that, you know, the amateur scene is for everybody, good, bad, or indifferent. Age-wise, you could be 30-plus. It really doesn't matter. In reality, it does matter to the extent that you want to get to the big leagues. When you're 34, 35 years old, unless your name is Bobby Lashley or some superstar, it's a waste. the amateur scene, to me, is focused on the youth movement of the MMA scene. Support the grassroots. Am I okay with the fact that there's 734-plus of fighters? Sure, I'll see how well they do. But at the end of the day, am I disappointed? Yeah, because you look at that, and that's what I look forward to in any amateur, not just with Epic Fighting. It goes for every amateur scene. So don't get me wrong. It goes for everybody. That's just what I look for, is I look for the growth.
I want to see that next guy that is going to be built as the star, the Joseph Williams, the Alex Trinidad, the Devin Taylors.
Exactly. And you're not going to see that with 34-year-old guys, 35-year-old guys, 39-year-old guys. You're not going to see, oh, that guy's the future. No, 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 no.
You're going to say, oh, that's a cool fight.
That may be a cool fight.
But you get four or five fights, and then your career is pretty much is done at that point in time.
And you'll be sucking wind. How good are their cardios?
That's another thing, okay? You got a 34-year-old against a 21-year-old, and who do you think is going to have more energy? Like, are we testing these guys for TRT? Are we testing these guys for testosterone as you get older? Because you know there's a big, huge discrepancy between the two. So where do you actually stand with what we're seeing here? I like the fights that are on this card, though. The card makes sense. The fights make sense. There is one that we got news about, but I can't really touch on it because they're still trying to figure out a way to save it. But there's one that I was almost thinking, like, we're going to have another soccer mom incident.
And you'll hear that talk come up on the show.
Right.
With our interview with Carlos Kramer here in a minute.
But we just got word also in the 11th hour, there were some issues that were going on between a fight about Jeremy Redfern, Elijah Harris, was that Jeremy Redfern, again, from the outside promotion, that hasn't been really the type of person to turn in blood work or anything like that because he fought for that other promotion. But nonetheless, this fight seems to be okay and it seems to be on. Is Jeremy Redfern versus Elijah Harris, who fought in Las Vegas on Tough Enough. And there's still a little bit of question mark on him, whether or not he'll be able to pass his suspension from Las Vegas.
If this fight can happen, the thing I'm interested about, and this is one of my top three fights to watch on this card, was that if this fight goes down, it's going to be interesting because Jeremy Redfern hasn't fought since 2011, even though you said he's fought for that other promotion. We all know what other promotion we're talking about. So it's going to remain to be seen about, well, what's going to happen. So Redfern is an interesting guy. He's got a legit stand-up game, loves to stand and bang. The guy Elijah Harris, who worked for Tough Enough, he's an interesting guy because he's a ground guy. For a guy that hasn't really fought a whole lot, how do you defend the takedowns? How do you avoid the key ingredient to Elijah Harris? So when you're looking at that, that fight's intriguing. A stand-up guy versus a legit ground guy.
But the thing I like about this, Sean, is, dude, what are we, Sean? Our nationality's what? The nationality is that we are native, so is Redfern. Jeremy Redfern, we had an interview with him about him carrying the nation on his back. We feel like we've been obligated to be the voice, too, is doing something different as we are Native Americans. Hosted a combat sports talk show. We were on ESPN. We broke the barriers. We were on K103 in Montreal, Quebec. We broke barriers. Jeremy Redfern seems to want to do the same thing in combat in MMA. Is that we have Virgil Zillwicker in the MMA world. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, the only one that has any real name recognition.
Right.
But he's from the Polynesian, so why not go out of your way to look at Jeremy Redfern, dig a little bit deeper on what makes this kid tick. And I'm telling you right now, the Native Nation needs to stand up, support this cat, be there in San Diego at the Four Port Sheraton, get the chance going. Let's tear the roof off this place. Let's show what it means to have the backing that he solely believes that he is, like, we are the voice of the voiceless. He's going to be the fighter of the fightless. So then answer me this. Why is he struggling to do medicals if he feels like he's got the nation on his shoulder? Because think about this, okay? From the other promotion, you don't have to take physicals. You don't need blood stuff. So he never had to do it. Never had to do it. And then when all of a sudden you're being forced, again, you're looking at a native. We know, trust me, based off of family experience, not saying that he is, but the mindsets or their intellect isn't exactly 100% on where it should be. So when you give a guy paper, like, okay, here's 1,000 things that you need to do. You need to get your medicals. You need to be tested for the hepatitis A, B, and C or whatever. You need to be doing X, Y, and C. Okay? There is so much on the table that if you've never done it, Sean, you have no idea how intense or how involved it truly is. And like he even sent out a text saying, I apologize. I'm trying to get everything together. Sorry it's taking so long. Okay, I get that, because that is a lot for a first-timer. He's never had to do it. You show up on a res, and you beat up a kid, and you move on to the next.
That's not true. Let's just put that out there. That's a little aggressive, Tristan.
Sean, have you seen the sanctioning?
Yes, okay. For that other promotion, but still.
Show up on a res. It's not a cage. Whoop on somebody, get crowned a champ, walk back out.
So that was one of the fights I was looking forward to. Hopefully it still goes down. But we talked about evolution. And you talk about future of MMA. You talk about when you look past the card of the 34 and up guys, and you look past that, you get to the main event. Rahir Dudes versus Joshua Wang Kim. Wang Kim showed up in the first one and put on a good debut with a TKO in his first one against Isaiah Gray. Now he's going in against a Team Arena guy that seems to have found himself again. And I say that because of the fact that you'll hear it with us talking to Carlos Kramer. But we always preach evolution. Alex Trinidad has evolved. Devin Taylor evolved. Joseph Williams evolved. But Joseph Williams is not for Team Arena.
No, but I'm just saying that we're talking about guys.
So you look at it, and Charles Martinez and the crew of Team Arena seems to have finally figured out their issues. And that was, for me, was, well, they can't defend the ground. They struggle to defend off the ground. Alex Trinidad has evolved and learned how to defend off the ground. Rahir Dudes seems to be following the Alex Trinidad mold of Team Arena. He's 2-1. He put on an outstanding show for TFE last month in what was, to me, the fight of the night for an amateur. He stood there and put on a show and banged. So this fight is intriguing because Joshua Kim is a Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, Judo, you name it, he's well-rounded. How will Rahir Dudes defend against a guy who's good in jiu-jitsu? A guy who can toss him? How well is he going to defend?
How well did Rahir Dudes adapt and change to take on a guy like Jonathan Wang Kim? And to think about this, Team Arena crowns champions. They had that mold. We're here, dudes, sipping against probably, I'm going to say, his hardest fight to date against Joshua Wang Kim.
Oh, I don't doubt it for a second.
If he comes out on top,
He better drop to the center of the ring, bawling his eyes out, because he just accomplished something that should mean more than anything, just alone because of who he's facing. Because that's an accomplishment and a feat in itself if you know who Jonathan Wayne Kim is.
Well, just the fact, too, is that right here, dudes, is main eventing on Epic 29. That's a feat in itself. And if you come out on top,
very true,
you just got to be stoked about that. But, like, we're twins. There's another twin. Joshua Wang Kim is a twin. His twin, Jonathan Wang Kim, will be taking on Alberto Romo. And Jonathan Wang Kim makes his epic debut finally. He didn't make it on the first fight card, but he makes it this one. See, and this is an interesting card. We've seen Alberto Romo fight four different times. We've been there every step of the way with Romo, ironically. But, again, this guy's a hit and miss. Three out of the four. Oh,
okay.
But this guy's a hit or a miss sometimes. Well, he wasn't a miss the last two times we saw him at Archangel MMA.
Right.
He seemed like he was getting it. His stand-up game got better. His takedown game got better. He was a beast on the ground. He then went to Roy Engelbach's MMA promotion, where he ended up losing and being submitted in the first round. It'll be interesting to see how well he adapts to coming back from being submitted in the first round. Because it seems like each time he's lost, he's gotten better. When he first lost, he came back and ran off two wins. Now he lost again. It'll be interesting to see how he comes back, too.
If he runs off another two wins.
So Romo has his hands full with Jonathan Wang Kim. Could be another standout fight. The Kim brothers could simply steal the show. But again, that's where I come back to. Grassroots. Support local MMA. The rise of the future. These two kids are 22 years old.
Right? But Sean, you also, something interesting about this card too is that you also have 10 fighters that are going to make their MMA debut on the card November 6th.
And seven of them are 34 and up.
Yes, and seven of them are also going to be fighting their second fight. And one of them is Jacob Moody. Nothing against the guy.
He said, you want to test him for TRT? Go for it.
I do. I want to test him. I'll test him. I'll test anybody. If I know how to do it, I'll Google it. WebMD. Dude, I look up TRT. I do all the research for that. And we can test you on the side. But Jacob Moody, his first fight was sloppy. And this guy being the karate background, I'm looking to see him improve. And now the stories that I'm hearing about his camp issues, I keep hearing that he's improved and he's doing good. His fight is intriguing.
Any fight with a karate guy is always intriguing. Because it's always, well, how well do you adapt?
But they seem to be toys.
Some karate guys are. Some karate guys, it's hard to jump into an MMA just because of their background. They're counter strikers about 80% of the time. And you're not the first striker. So it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to the game now with his second fight with Epic.
And see how he moves forward in his career. Anyways, Sean, we are now joined with the man himself, the voice of San Diego MMA, Carlos Kramer. Thank you, Carlos Kramer, for joining the Ducrosse Brothers Sports Warriors with Sean and Tristy Ducrosse.
It is a pleasure to be here, my man. Keep lighting up the airwaves all right over this great land of ours.
Epic 29 is coming up here on Friday, November 6th. What is intriguing you about this fight card?
Well, I tell you what, it's going to be a special night because there's a lot of special fights on this. The biggest fight that is intriguing to me is the Lacey J. Lodes fight. She's going against Anita Hollenleiter. That's going to be a war, man. I'll tell you why. It's 170-pound gals, which we really haven't seen too much. And you've seen the shots of Lacey. She is an absolute beast. She's well put together. She carries it well. She walks around at, say, 175 and loses, you know, five or six to fight. You talk about a woman with some incredible training. She's only been training 1 year, but it's been with Russ Edwards. This man is an absolute beast. His nickname's a Silverback. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's 2-0 as a pro fighter, 275-pound guy. And he told me one-on-one, he said, I spar with Lacey. I deliver blows like I deliver on a man. She takes them, and she delivers blows back. And he said, and on the ground, she's tough as nails. That's all I need to hear to be intrigued, you know, on this gal.
Absolutely. And when you're talking about women's fighting, it seems like trying to get everybody behind women's fighting, it's hard to do. And when you got a woman that can pack a punch like a man and put on a show for the fans, it'll intrigue a lot of people.
Most definitely, most definitely. And you know what? We want to, man or woman, we want to relate. We want to care about the person or be intrigued by them in the cage. Lacey J is an entertainment attorney as well. So she's got brains. You know, she's doing this not because she has to, because she wants to. And that's purely what we see, you know, when you guys are always at events and with myself as well. You know, we see at this amateur level the passion, and those ones that are that passionate are the ones that go through to pro and really thrive.
And I think, Carlos, this is Sean. It comes back to my other question, is that when I was going through all these fights, and you're talking about the amateur scene and the local scene, if you will, one thing that stood out to me on this card is the fact that there's a lot of 34-plus-year-old fighters, a total of 7 people that are scheduled to fight on this fight card. Do you think that's going to be impactful to have that many older type of fighters versus the younger generation?
You know what? I like it because mixed martial arts is so new. There's a lot of guys in that 34 to 39 to 43 age group that were like, God, I kind of missed the boat on this. You know, if it would have come out when I was a younger guy, I would have done it and blah, blah, blah. But I wrestled in high school, and then he starts thinking about it and says, you know what, let me train a little jiu-jitsu. Let me learn submissions with my wrestling. And turns out the guy's 38 or 40, and he's gonna go for a fight. I think it's beautiful. I think it's opening up everything. And, of course, you have different advantages when you're older, but you also have, you know, some significant disadvantages too. And that is the motor of a 21-year-old is going to be on in full blast no matter what. So, you know, I my hat's off to him. How do you guys feel about it? It's different. You know, I commend anybody getting in the cage, period, as long as you're not a soccer mom like we've seen before. But if you're trained and you want to bring it, bring it. I don't care what age you are.
Carlos Kramer, Tristan here. You brought up the soccer mom thing. I have something in my notes that I was iffy on whether or not I want to touch it, but there's a fight that has Amanda Asprin that's on this card, and we all versus Jessica Nasrallah, and all accounts from everything that I've seen, I kind of get the feeling that this could be another version of the XFC soccer mom, and I'm like thinking like, please no videotape.
You know what? You made a great point, and in the sanctity always of the sport, because that's number one, and really what's number one is always safety, right? So it is my understanding that fight is no longer happening due to the well-roundedness and the jiu-jitsu of Amanda. So all parties have agreed to withdraw on this bout, and you, my friends, are sharp for being able to see something like that before it actually happens.
Thank goodness, because I was looking at that and I was just like, I would feel so bad to even be at that event to see a fight like that.
Well, yeah, and you never know how anything's going to happen, you know. But if you do see a glaring disadvantage, you know, I'm only reporting from what I hear. I'm not in the the aspect of putting the fights together here, but I know that they always want to and will do the right thing for the fighters, their safety, and the sport. And that's different than, you know, some other organizations have done. But I really have been impressed and excited, guys, as you're hitting them well as well, for the amount of quality MMA that's coming here to San Diego now. and really taking form.
Absolutely. Tristan here, Carlos. It's something that piques my interest about the card, or let alone just in general about MMA out here in SoCal, is that you're also seeing new fighters that are being developed. And
yeah.
That's something that has always interested Sean and I, is that we like to see new fighters. And here you got 10 fighters that will be making their MMA amateur debut on this card as well.
Yeah, you know what? It's all about the new guys. It's seeing that new guy that's been under everybody's radar, but his own team. And his team has been talking about this guy, and word kind of spreads, and, you know, or gal, and it just starts exploding from there. You know, that's what it's all about, and that's where, you know, these guys like the Joseph Williams, right, and the Alex Trinidads, and these guys are just evolving and coming up and rising. And we're in the mecca of MMA in the world here in San Diego. We really are. So it's just, we're very, very fortunate to be a part of it.
Carlos Kramer here with the DeCross Brothers of Sports Warriors. You're talking about rising stars and people that probably need to know a little bit more about the fighters that are out there. Two guys that are on this card. One guy, to my knowledge, did not debut like he was scheduled to debut on the first Epic card, which was Jonathan Kim, one of the twins of the Kim family. But Joshua will be making his second amateur fight debut for Epic, and Jonathan is scheduled to also make his Epic debut. What is it about those two guys that have intrigued the amateur scene in San Diego so much?
You know, both of those guys, you know, they're brothers. They're out of ISD, International Self-Defense, which is a great school run by some quality coaches over there. And these guys are just starting to rise to the top. You know, Josh Wang Kim is going against Rahir Dudes in the main event. Rahir Dudes from the arena, you know, we've seen him before. He's amazing. The arena is amazing. I mean, you want to talk about a gym as well as ISD, where these guys are coming from. I just interviewed Charles Martinez yesterday at the arena, and their facility is ridiculous. It's huge. It's clean. It's got everything. And their strength and conditioning coach, Andy Shandig, is amazing as well. He works with, you know, Chris Cyborg and the top Phil Davis and top people like that. So it's just really incredible to see the product of these schools that we have here. And those are the Wang Kim brothers, you know, as well as so many others. But these guys are special.
It seems that way. Sean here, you talked about Rahir Dudes at Team Arena. One thing that since my time of covering Team Arena and Charles Martinez and their crew is that at one point they seemed like they had a glaring weakness, and that was the inability to stop the takedowns and defend from the ground. But you've seen the evolution of Alex Trinidad, and it seems like we're seeing that similar evolution now with Rahir Dudes, seeing as how we saw him dominate at TFE a couple months ago. It seems like they're starting to get their feet again, and they're starting to get going again. And the evolution that Charles Martinez is establishing over at Team Arena is starting to show. And having these two guys at the main event, I think the fans are in for a treat.
I tell you what, hands down, it's just they are rocking over there. They're rocking. I mean, Charles just came back from cornering Jesse Taylor, former UFC star, who, you know, in front of 12,000 screaming fans at KSW over there. They are always busy. They've got guys like, you know, Devin Taylor, people like that are just starting to shine as well. They do have some, hands down, I mean, top to bottom, their coaching staff is just stacked, including jiu-jitsu with Barrett Yoshida, who Jake Mapes is behind him, who is 9-0 as an MMA fighter, and then just, you know, said he doesn't want to fight anymore. That guy at black belt in jiu-jitsu as well would be the man at any other gym. It just so happens he's under a legend at the arena. So that's what kind of instruction these guys are getting, and they're becoming that well-rounded machine. The Wang Kim brothers, that's one thing we'll see in their game. These guys are well-rounded. They can do it all. And that's that true evolution, right? That's
Absolutely.
What's taking place.
Absolutely. That's what I was just looking at, is that Joshua Kim,
versus right here, dudes. I got Joshua Kim listed as a guy that has trained in Muay Thai background, jiu-jitsu, judo, you just name it. This kid's basically already done it all, and he's just now debuting at the age of, I think, what, 22?
Yeah, it's perfect. Perfect timing in his life, perfect timing for training. You know, when we were kids and we would play like a video game and see a guy who could do everything in the video game, it's now coming to fruition, which is great in the well-roundedness. You know, George St. Pierre really kind of led the way on being that complete, you know, fighter. And it's just amazing to see so many GSPs coming through now, because these are the byproduct of these kids training since they're 14, 15 years old.
Carlos Kramer here with the Sports Warriors, the DeCross Brothers. Being well-rounded is what's intrigued, I think, a lot of people with the evolution. And again, I keep using that phrase because it's what needs to become of MMA, is evolution. And
right. And
being single to one style has always been the downfall of a lot of premier fighters. But being able to adapt and to grow in the field continues to be the evolution of MMA.
Exactly. And you know what? That's where we see, like, the glaring difference in a Ronda Rousey compared to her opponents. But now, with that evolution and time, we're seeing that gap get shorter and shorter. It's coming together. You know, got a cyborg fight as we're on it would be amazing. You know, she's fighting Holly Holm coming up here, multiple-time world champion kickboxer. And I think Ronda is just going to disseminate her yet again, and I think she's going to take this one to the ground. And you know, I'm surprised Holly Holm has a shot this early. I wanted to get your guys' take on that.
Okay, Tristan here. I'm going to touch on this quickly because I'm the one that's been advocate against Ronda Rousey.
Uh-huh.
So here's the thing about Ronda Rousey. This is what I think about both this matchup. Ronda Rousey is good on the ground. Don't get me wrong. One of the premier fighters in the world. Don't get me wrong. The issue I have with her is that physically, her stand-up game is not on par with pretty much anybody that has a striking shot. My issue with Holly Holm, though, is that she fights like she's hesitant inside the octagon. She has yet to show her boxing prowess that everybody rants and raves about. She would rather kind of put out her jab there and measure out an opponent, like, oh my God, please don't hit me type of jab.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be an issue because if she doesn't put any force behind it and hit Ronda Rousey, Ronda Rousey is going to end this fight in 23 seconds.
You know, Rousey went against Beth Correa, who was supposed to be the premier striker, and Rousey took her out in, what, 39 seconds on their feet? I like Ronda's stand-up. I just hope she doesn't need to prove a point, you know, against Holly. I think she's a smarter fighter than that. Holly's worked hard on the ground, but you guys know it's been, I think she's worked on the ground maybe 3 years. That can't compare to someone who's getting arm-barred in her crib.
That's so true.
You know, by her mom. And there are stories she literally said, my mom used to arm-bar me in my crib, you know. That's where she learned it. The ground is something that takes years and years and years to learn. The others, you know, you can learn much quicker. But the ground, you know, there's phenoms that learn it so fast. The three-year guys, you know, like BJ Penn getting his black belt in 3.5 years. But, man, it's a definite a time factor for experience. But I don't know. I think the fight's going to be over early. I think that's a first-round affair. I don't see Holly Holm making it out of the first. How about you, Sean?
I'm kind of torn between this. And I was thinking about it as I was listening to you and I was listening to Tristan. I was trying to think about it because at one moment, I believe Ronda Rousey is going to win it. There's no questions asked. There's no hesitation in that. How it's going to happen, it's an interesting situation for me. Because every single fight I've seen Ronda Rousey win has been because of the fact that the opponent has come in and blatantly rushed her. And with the judo background, has been able to toss people and put her in an armbar.
Right.
So I can't completely give her the benefit of the doubt of being as good as people claim she is. However, She was impressive as being the aggressor in the Beth Correa fight, which went, oh, okay, maybe she has changed a little bit. But I think what everybody else is going to see, and I'm shocked I'm going to say this, is you will see a very different Ronda Rousey. Not the same Ronda Rousey that you've seen in the past. The one that's going to sucker you in and then toss you and armbar you. She's not going to be the one that came in and shot in and then just beat up and annihilated Beth Correa. No, 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 no. I think what everybody's going to see is a much calmer and much patient Ronda Rousey.
You're I agree.
Going, you're
definitely
not going to see her the same
there.
You've seen her.
You know, and by the way, I think we can all three agree, we would love to see a great fight. So, you know what I mean? What we're calling on and predicting, man, if it went into, the third round, I'd be fired up. Ronda needs those challenges. Only Misha's been able to do that, take her into a third round. But it would be great to see. Unfortunately, I don't think so on this one.
I think that if it goes past the first round, it's exactly what many people are hoping it's going to be. They don't want it to go be a first round, and quite frankly, I don't see it going past the second round. I think it's going to go into the second round because of the fact that Ronda Rousey is going to be patient, because of the fact that on paper, Holly Holm is such an excellent striker, great boxing background, legit kickboxer. Holly Holm's going to come out there
and
try
to
keep...
And she's got knees. You know, she's dangerous. Yeah, you definitely cannot rush a Holly Holm.
Yeah, so I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a very methodical, patient Ronda Rousey, and it's going to go to the second round where she's going to find a way to get past the jab and get past the striking and the point boxing style of Holly Holm.
And you know what the thing is, too? I mean, in my opinion, the ground is such a huge mismatch for Holly. So she's going to be well aware of that and do whatever she can to not get to the ground. Because if Ronda does get her there, when it happens, it's going to be over. So, you know, whatever that can happen, that's when the fight will end, in my opinion. But I'm looking forward to seeing it, guys. And you know what? This epic is going to be rocking. You know, it's back at the Four Point Sheraton. Everyone can still get your tickets. Go to epicfighting.com. Say you listen to the show and follow, guys, for my fans, follow the DuCrosse brothers. You guys are doing great things and so impactful for mixed martial arts. It just like, you know, you have the same passion that I feel that I do, and we are there for the right reasons and truly love our family and what we do.
I appreciate that, Carlos. And before we let you go, though, I've got to touch on two things before you go. And one, to stay on the Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey thing, you talked about the ground. I've got to ask you, being a trained ground guy, what would be your advice to Holly Holm, who traditionally has not trained on the ground, to try to stop a beast like a Ronda Rousey?
I mean, she is going to have been working on her sprawls, five times a day. She is definitely one that the last 3 years she's really hit it, and I've actually seen video of her on the ground. She moves very well, but again, like we said, it's not even in the same stratosphere as a Ronda Rousey. So she has got to keep the distance with jabs and with kicks, make Ronda afraid. You know, no one's ever had Ronda at a distance. Holly's a taller fighter, too. If she can keep a distance and not get taken to the ground, and vary it up with jabs and front snapping kicks as well as side head kicks, and make Ronda worried about that. No one's ever taken Ronda out of her comfort zone. So this could be a strange place for her. We'll see how she reacts, but that's my advice to Holly Holm, and stay off the ground at all costs.
All right, there you have it. With Carlos Kramer with the Sports Warriors, the DuCrosse Brothers, thank you, my man. Epic 29 at the Four Point Sheraton going down November 6th this Friday. Come join your boys, the Sports Warriors and Carlos Kramer.
Hey, my guy, my bros, it's been an absolute pleasure to be on. Keep rocking, keep doing it up, and we'll see you guys on Friday night. We'll tear the roof off.
All right, everybody. You're listening to the Sports Warriors. That was Carlos Kramer, the voice of MMA out here in San Diego. Incredible dude. If you don't know who he is, you should. Go ahead and look up Carlos Kramer. He's all over the local MMA scene, just like we are. Incredible dude. Tune into his show, too. Sean, once again, another person that shows exactly why we do what we do, right?
And why we support local MMA, too. So he goes to show that he had a lot of similarities to what we were saying earlier, and was just almost like intertwined about what we had to say about Epic 29. So if you're in the San Diego area, go to the Four Point Sheraton, check out Epic 29, watch these guys fight.
Dude, join the Ducrosse Brothers and Carlos Kramer, and we'll talk MMA all night. But, Sean, we have coming up, we got the final score that's going to be settled in a trilogy, while another UFC champ impresses the video viewers. More with the Ducrosse Brothers Sports Warriors, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse, coming right up.
Excelsior, in Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl. Not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducrosse Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody. You are listening to the Ducrosse Brothers Sports Warriors with your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse. Sean, we got an incredible wrap-up coming up. Our title of our show was called Settle the Score. And it comes down to this very fight that I'm about to say that will be the end all. The swan song for one fighter. One's going to walk out 2-1 versus each other. That's it. No more. One career might be ended on this night.
Not might, it will. Dan Henderson versus Vitor Belfort goes down. UFC Fight Night 77. One person is going to walk out the victor. The other person is going to walk out announcing retirement.
Absolutely. And what's interesting about this, Sean, is that the last time they fought was November of 2013. 2 years ago, they fought. Hendo got knocked out in a UFC ring by Vitor Belfort. Both men were on TRT. Both men come off of TRT. Vitor Belfort gets absolutely destroyed by Chris Weidman. Yet Hendo comes out and knocks out Tim Bosch. Leaves you question about which one actually went the right way.
It's also the difference between the two. When you've got a devastating right hand like Dan Henderson, it doesn't matter. All it takes is that one punch.
But can he continue to just, at his age?
As long as you have that one punch, you can keep going. As long as your heart desires. If he continues to feel that fire that's inside of him and wants to fight, as long as he's got that right hand, he can keep going.
But really, you think he could go in at his age and honestly rely heavy on trading punches?
If he's a gatekeeper of the lightweight division, absolutely.
I don't want to see him get punched in the head so many times like that. I don't want to see a guy like Dan Henderson take unnecessary punishment in trading.
Yeah, he needs to see. He's fighting right now the middleweight division against Chris Weidman. And you've got to wonder at some point, is light heavyweight in his future? Because in the light heavyweight, there's a lot of sluggers. He could probably keep his his career going if he goes up, if he loses this fight. Vitor Belfort, if he loses to a Dan Anderson, he may want to contemplate about retirement, because then it just shows that he's a little bit on the slower side. And can he, if he can't handle a Chris Weidman, and then he sure as heck can't handle a Dan Anderson, he needs to reevaluate his situation.
Well, you saw it last time, Sean. His first time off the TRT, dude, he looked significantly smaller and slower
and older
and got destroyed by Chris Weidman. My concern is him moving into a fight against Dan Henderson, and with that H-bomb that is incredible, if he gets caught, which I'm going to go out on a limb here, my prediction is that he's going to get knocked out in the first round. That's such a horrible way for Vitor Belfort's career to ultimately come down and end.
No doubt. And that's relatively the only fight I'm kind of interested in seeing on UFC Fight Night is that one. It's like there's another one that kind of Alex Oliveira versus Petr Holloman, maybe.
Oh, I'm looking at Glover Teixeira versus Patrick Cummings, because I look at Teixeira, who here's a guy that won 20 straight fights, gets into a light heavyweight matchup against John Jones and gets destroyed. The depth at light heavyweight is so shallow. You mentioned about Dan Henderson possibly moving up into light heavyweight. That's a very strong possibility with how shallow the UFC talent pool is, let alone in the light heavyweight division. Daniel Cormier is the new 205 champion there. I mean, at some point, Glover won over Ovince St. Preux. So that gives him some kind of leeway to, you know, start making waves again in that light heavyweight division just because it's so shallow.
If Glover Teixeira wins, If he's able to hold off Patrick Cummins, here's my question. We all know John Jones is coming back. We all know John Jones is calling out Daniel Cormier already. We know Daniel Cormier is calling him out. But the question is that because of the fact that John Jones has been out for relatively a year, if Glover Teixeira wins, is that the next fight first? Because I don't see why you would automatically slot John Jones back in after he was so posterized for doing cocaine and being suspended for as long as he did. Why does he deserve to go right in and go after his title? I believe for the respect of the sport, he needs to work his way up and not just, here you go.
That's very true, because I also think about this as a title eliminator kind of.
I can kind of see that.
Because I think the winner of this should ultimately get a shot at John Jones or a shot at moving up in the ranks. My only issue with this is that I see two of these guys that are, you win, you move on. You lose, you fall out, and back to the line you go. Patrick Cummins, though, poses a threat to Glover Teixeira just because Patrick Cummins is a superior wrestler. Glover has very little to no takedown defense at all.
That's funny that you mentioned about not having takedown defense, because I get that. That if Glover Teixeira wants to stand, he has to avoid the takedowns. And that is an interesting fight. But then you also got to look back at the other news coming out of the light heavyweight division, Tristan. And that's the fact that they've announced that you have Rumble Johnson versus Ryan Bader in the light heavyweight division in one of their next upcoming shows in Newark, New Jersey.
On a fight night. On a UFC Fox, I should say.
And you're talking about the inability to stop takedown defenses.
See, to have Ryan Bader versus Anthony Rumble Johnson in the light heavyweight division, Glover Teixeira, Patrick Cummins in the lightweight division, in the light heavyweight division, you got John Jones coming back. I think now the shuffle starts.
I can see that, because what happens if Rumble loses again to Ryan Bader?
Back to the line.
What happens if Cummins or Glover Teixeira?
Back to the line.
The shuffling of the light heavyweight division could be completely altered in the next 2 months. And the biggest question, though, isn't so much about what's going to happen with Patrick Cummins and Glover Teixeira, but rather what's going to happen if Rumble cannot defend a takedown again against a superior wrestler in Ryan Bader.
Ain't that the truth?
He struggled against Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier made him look like he was a weak guy.
And at some point, Daniel Cormier and Patrick Cummins also were teammates and wrestlers together. So if anybody has a game plan on defeating Anthony Rumble Johnson, it's going to be Ryan Bader and Patrick Cummins. So think about this, Sean. If Patrick Cummins gets past Glover Teixeira or falls down and loses from Glover and Rumble loses to Ryan Bader, Patrick Cummins versus Anthony Rumble Johnson is a possibility on paper. And if he loses to Patrick Cummins, is he out of the UFC again?
That's questions that are all going to have to be answered by the UFC in the upcoming months. But you know what? That's going to be about it for us tonight.
Yep. So thank you for listening to the DuCross Brothers right here on Blog Talk Radio. We are your boys, the Sports Warriors, Sean and Tristan DuCross. You can follow us on Facebook. Just search Sean and Tristan DuCross. Look up our website for all the latest MMA news, combat sports at www.thehotspotshow.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the DuCross Bros. Until next time, we're out.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan DuCross.